Richard Rant's show. It is Wednesday at 5 o'clock Pacific time, and that means that the Richard Rant's show is live on Facebook. Episodes will later be posted to podcast platforms such as Apple and Spotify, Radio Public, and Google, one of whom you will see a link for. There's also a Richard Rant's show group on Facebook. As the sun sets here in San Francisco, I come to you live to talk about issues that reflect on our world politically, locally, nationally, internationally, globally, cosmically, and personally. I am happy to receive comments from viewers here on Facebook, and also you can send me an email at richardrants@yahoo.com. So let's get into it. What is going on in the world, and what is there to discuss as we enter this Thanksgiving weekend? And Thanksgiving is already an item of controversy, as it talks about a somewhat perhaps mythical cooperation between the invading colonizers from Europe who came here to the United States and perhaps were initially welcomed by some of the native population and helped. There is this story of a feast that is commemorated by the Thanksgiving celebration, but which was a precursor to a massive genocide of the Native American population of this continent as the colonizers from Europe advanced ever further west. And this story of colonization is one that the entire world has sustained from mostly from Europe. Of course, there have been other colonizers coming from Asia over time, from various areas, African countries taking over, other African countries, South American groups taking over, but the biggest ones have come from Europe. We remember the Dutch East India Company and the British India Company, who practically ran their own empires almost without needing the support of government, or perhaps beyond government. This is part of the background that I read in a recent article in Harper's Magazine called The Silenced Majority by Reina Dasgupta, in which he lays out a pretty bleak assessment of how democracy, and the subtitles, Can America Still Afford Democracy?, how democracy is being undermined by the fact that labor is increasingly disconnected from the needs of capital, so that it resembles in some ways the time of the East India Company's dominance over a colonial world, in which it really didn't matter to that company and to the profits that were brought to the investors, who all belonged to the elite top 10%, top 1% of the capital acquisition elite within the country of England, so that it didn't matter to them what the opinion of the populace was, or whether the populace of England prospered or not, because their profits were coming from elsewhere. And similarly, it draws a parallel to the way that the modern world has profits being harvested from this brand new area of the internet that is a new frontier in many ways, where profits are being created without the benefit of a lot of labor. so that laborers are not part of the equation, and even governments are not necessarily part of the equation. And as these top technology companies even endeavor to create their own systems of finance and money, so that that becomes increasingly detached from governments. And of course, the governments are what are democratic in the democratic areas of the most of the industrialized and wealthy world have democracies now, as close an approximation as we can get, but where people still vote and where votes count. But votes counted more in the past when labor was more important. But even this has been distorted over time by the economic dominance of these countries, so that the laborers in the US, during the time when laborers actually made a appreciable living for themselves, was during a time when they benefited from the hegemony of the United States economic system. So all of this brings us to the idea that we are on a precipice. We are on a precipice where we may be losing our democracy, and where we may be losing even the control over, or the semblance or approximation or some portion of control over, what the forces of capital are doing. So this idea of a precipice, and I want to get to how this isn't all doom and gloom, and there are rays and hope, but the people are going to have to work for that. And it's been repeated over and over again on progressive circles and for the movements that are working towards a progressive resolution, towards making this a better world for all people, for working people, which is that we are going to have to keep pushing. We're going to have to keep pushing because the forces of profit don't care. We're the top 1% of earners are just making more and more, and they will just as soon keep doing it until the planet is destroyed. On Rumble with Michael Moore, his podcast, about a week ago, they had an episode called "Action is the Antidote to Despair." And that's a great phrase, because while talking about this doom and gloom, we can tend to despair. Well, what hope is there? Towards the end of that episode, which involved a discussion with filmmakers Jeff Gibbs and Ozzie Zehner, who put out Planet of the Humans, which is a film that was distributed by Michael Moore, Planet of the Humans, which laid out how the green movement has failed, and all of the green efforts, many of them have been undermined, and they have, because the corporate interests and the interests of capital and profit have insinuated themselves into the green movement, starting to greenwash the ideas, such as trying to say that, well, by building more and more solar power cells, we're going to overcome this problem, or focusing too much on carbon emissions, because yes, global warming is an important problem, and carbon emissions are the main contributor to global warming and the climate change emergency. But in fact, over the last couple of hundred years, or in an accelerated fashion, in the past few years, the main driver of the diminution of the Earth's resources has not been climate change, but it has been the over-exploitation by human expansion and economic expansion of the increasingly less available resources of the Earth that took millions of years to create and accumulate, but have been very quickly reduced just over the past couple of hundred years by this increasing drive to expand, always expand. And while the population expands, but also the economies have to expand. And the way to overcome this is not by building more, by building more green energy. That may be part of it, but even more than that, we have to stop insisting that economies expand. We cannot continue to expand and focus more on taking care of the people who are here. And that can be done without expanding the economies, and focus more on saving the planet, saving what is left of the natural resources of this planet, the natural life on this planet. That is where the antidote to despair comes in for Jeff Gibbs and Ozzie Zehner, because they talk about how once they were able to make their peace with the fact that it is do or die time for the world, that there is no longer the luxury of being able to continue to live on this precipice. That is when they started to get a little bit more peace of mind, as they started to take action and started to cherish the living world. Every sunset is precious. Every bird, every blade of grass is precious. And I quote them on this. It's time to take action, because the depletion of resources, essential resources, is disguised by our ability to use fossil fuels to reach the increasingly less reachable resources, to get water, while the sources of clean water on the surface of the planet are depleted. We use fossil fuels and pumping and artificial means to bring water up from below the planet, while the wood and the forests are no longer so available to build with. We're making up for this by using plastic and other fossil fuels. And this is completely unsustainable, that it has to come to a point where people completely change the idea of expansion and focus more on preserving and growing back the natural resources of the world. This is what they're talking about in this interview on Rumble with Michael Moore, with the background of Planet of the Humans, which I will continue to recommend. And it can be pretty harsh towards the green environmental movement, because they have been undermined and co-opted by the same corporate and elite interests of capital that are greenwashing some of this. So it's an excellent background to look at. Going against the corporate interests, the current Biden administration will not go against the corporate interests unless they are pushed and pressured. And that is indicated by some of the nominees that we have recently seen by the Biden administration. We have to really look out, and the relationship between government and the military-industrial complex is an ongoing problem, as the amount of spending on the military eclipses all the more important issues that we need to be spending on. And that is something that we can't let our guard down on. And we look at, there was resistance, and resistance can help, because when Biden was going to choose Flournoy as perhaps the Secretary of Defense, well, activists jumped in and pointed out that this potential Secretary of Defense has been in the private sphere promoting more spending on behalf of defense contractors for many years. This is the type of on-guard activism that we will need to continue, that we cannot let our guard down. We can't trust this new administration to do the right thing unless they are pushed. Now, the bright side is they can be pushed. They have been pushed. If you look at the platform of the Democratic Party, it contains many extremely progressive ideals, but they are not going to carry through unless we continue to push them. So we've got this Anthony Blinken, who for Secretary of State has been nominated. And he's a good one in many ways because he is a career diplomat. That's something that has been extremely lacking. Imagine having a diplomat as the head of the Secretary of State. It shouldn't be so hard to imagine, but unfortunately it has been. But yes, so yes, bring in a professional diplomat as the head of Secretary of State, one who is pledged to cooperate internationally, because that is going to be entirely necessary to make this world a better place, not just for all humans, but for all living beings. And we're going to have to cooperate. Yes, we'll be rejoining the Paris Accord. And John Kerry, who also has been working in private finance, who comes off of a very high executive position with the Bank of America, which is very strongly invested in climate, destroying fossil fuels, that is someone, yes, who is part of this establishment that has been destroying the earth. It's also someone who can say the right things, and if pushed, will do the right things, can do the right things. And he pointed out that we will rejoin the Paris Accords, which are an important step of international cooperation to address climate change. But as the creators of Planet of the Humans point out, climate change, while real and an important driver of the crisis that humankind finds itself in, that the entire planet finds itself in because of the actions of humankind, is not the only issue at hand. And the depletion of the resources on our Earth are caused not principally by climate change, but of the exploitation of the resources by this ever-growing, ever-expanding humankind. And we need to rein all of that in. And I will add that the extremely unequal division of resources is an important driver of this as well. And if the resources were more evenly divided and more focused on helping people and helping the planet to recover instead of eternally, continually benefiting the rich to make them richer while the poor get poorer everywhere, this has to be turned around. We've got to put a stop to the enrichment of the rich at the expense of everyone else. And we're going to have to help the less fortunate in the world and bring the resources that are being hoarded at the top into action and stop spending it on the military and start spending it on recovering this planet's integrity and helping those on the planet who are less fortunate. That is the direction that we need to take, and we're going to have to keep pushing hard for that. And, well, as labor becomes less and less important, many people who perhaps will become more desperate because labor is not as available or as remunerative, and we cannot support ourselves by laboring, we're going to have to push for a completely new way of looking at it. And we're going to have to push to a reapportionment of all of these resources for the benefit of all people and all mankind and all the planet. That is the direction we're going to have to keep pushing for. And when you see that Blinken and Flournoy, a couple of the, and also the nominee for the CIA that has been brought in, was another member of WestExec, we're going to have to look very carefully at these firms, at these think tanks that are funded by the military-industrial complex, and realize that these members are potentially part of the revolving door complex between the military-industrial complex and the government, who use their government influence to come over to the private sector and allow them to lobby for further government investment in these defense-related industries, This is something we're going to have to keep pushing and keep bringing out. And we can also refer to Democracy Now! Just had a very interesting interview with Barbara Ransby and David Sirota, and this was today, about these nominees and their connections to lobbying firms, connections to the military-industrial complex, and talking about how we can't let down our guard for a second. And then, you know, this is good. For instance, it sure beats, you know, the Trump administration for sure, and we could not even hope to influence them. So we can be really happy about that, but we can't just sit back. And when they talk about bringing in someone like Rahm Emanuel as possible Secretary of Transportation, that cannot be allowed. And that's someone who covered up the murder of Laquan McDonald in Chicago and has been defunding public schools in favor of allowing government funds to be given to private schools. This is something that we cannot allow. This is something that we've got to stay on our guard against. So I'm glad to hear Barbara Ransby continue to discuss these important issues on Democracy Now! And we've got John Kerry, for instance, as David Sirota pointed out. As I mentioned, got a top position with Bank of America, which is one of the largest financiers of fossil fuel developments in the world. Now it comes to government as Biden's first climate pick. He might not be terrible on climate, but we need to understand where these people come from. This administration is very much middle ground, and the middle is better than where we've been, but we're going to have to push these middle ground people and continue to push them if we're going to achieve some sort of better state of affairs for the world and for the country. And we're going to have to keep a close eye on the fact that this is being undermined by the followers of the ex-president Trump, who are continuing to sow doubt in the election and continue to try to weaken the power of the Biden administration to make this a better place and a better country. And if we can't turn it around for the average person, it is going to be a very dangerous situation in 4 years. So we have to make sure to do that, and I certainly hope that the new Biden administration can do it. There are certainly encouraging signals. We have a task force for the coronavirus that is science-based and based on the well-established best practices for overcoming a pandemic that have been put into successful use in many different countries around the world. And off the top of my head, Taiwan, South Korea, Thailand come into mind, as well as Iceland and New Zealand. Now, some of these countries have smaller populations. Now, even in Europe, which has been suffering a second wave, they've certainly been doing a lot better than America. And we're going to bring in the vaccines, and the vaccines are not going to be a complete immediate end panacea for the pandemic, but they are going to help and they're going to come in. If we can get those distributed equitably to everyone, and this is another fight, and some encouraging movements have been brought up, whereas the leadership of France recently brought up a proposition to the World Health Organization and the United Nations that developed countries should devote a quarter of their income, a quarter of their product, to helping out the less prosperous nations in the world. And I think that is along the lines of something that we need to start doing. Oh. There is a backlash against that. There's always a backlash from those who benefit from the extreme inequality, where people at the top have been making more and more money while everyone else is making less and less. And they like it that way. And they don't care what the results are for everyone else. They just want to keep making money in that way. Well, we can see that, for instance, one of the backlashes in France has been that Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, and his administration have introduced, proposed new laws which would do things like completely outlaw the revelation and the video filming of police officers on duty. Can you imagine if we could not film police officers on duty, if that was against the law? Now that is an incredibly anti-democratic and authoritarian type of law, and I certainly hope that that will be defeated, and that is the type of thing that we're going to have to stay on our guard against. Because if we let our guard down, that's the type of thing that the right wing will bring in. So while on one hand, the Macron government has been proposing a very, I hesitate to use the word generous, because it shouldn't be a matter of being generous. It shouldn't be a matter of any kind of largesse on the part of the developing countries. This should be something that is in the DNA of those who are better off, to help those who are less well off. But it is a struggle. It is a changing of the entire approach to how we look at the world. And we've got to continue to encourage that. Those of us, and there are so many more of us, who are not in the top 10% or 1%, who are not benefiting from the increasing depletion of the world's resources, for the increasing benefit of those at the top earning levels. There are so many more of us that if we can come together and use our power, and we have the movements in place more so than ever before to do this. The Sunrise Movement, the Black Lives Matter movement, and other more progressive movements throughout the world. We have the Gilets Jaunes in France. We have the pro-democracy movement in Hong Kong. We have important movements all throughout the world who are pushing this elite, the top 1%, and they will continue to have to be pushed. And we have another area, these tech companies like Facebook and Google and Apple, who are increasingly separated from even the governments of the world, and we're going to have to push. And the governments, of course, offer the ability to rein them in still, and if they're pushed by the people, they may well do so. But they've got to be pushed before perhaps the tech companies make even the governments of the world irrelevant. And some people don't like the government, but I'll tell you, even compared to, we'll wish that we had the government if a tech company like Facebook managed to control more elements of our world, because they're not beholden to the people at all. As difficult as our elections may be to, and those are not the only ways, but as difficult as the elections and the pushing of the people on the government are, as hard as it is to believe in the power that we have, it will be even harder if an unaccountable force like Facebook and the other tech companies can continue to consolidate their control. And they certainly have a lot. They know everything about us, don't they? And they're selling that information. So before that gets out of hand, let's continue to insist that our governments bring in antitrust. And as I draw to the close of today's half hour, thank you for listening. Rant and resist. Peace and love.